Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Hey everybody, it's Devin, and before we get started, just a note that this episode contains mentions of suicide and domestic violence. I'm Devin Katayama, and you're listening to The Bay, local news to keep you rooted. Shortly after the mass shooting at a Valley Transportation Authority rail yard in San Jose 2 weeks ago, we started hearing from public officials about California's red flag law. It's a law that's supposed to prevent gun violence before it happens, but it's still not used that often, and we don't know how effective it really is at stopping mass shootings.
A gun violence restraining order is a band-aid. It's not a medicine, and it's not going to cure the problem.
Today, what California's red flag law does and why actually using it is more complicated than it seems.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
After a mass shooting, there are usually a list of things that people talk about as a way that a shooting could have been prevented, and a red flag order is one of them.
Aditi Bunlamudi is a Silicon Valley reporter for KQED.
Well, very basically speaking, red flag laws are sort of meant for people who have raised red flags in the past. And officials like Santa Clara County Supervisor Dave Cortese, like Assemblymember Phil Ting, and Representative Ro Khanna, and a number of others have been talking about red flag laws as a way that could have prevented this shooting from happening.
I feel like with mass shootings in America, they often follow these scripts. Like, there's the shooting, and then there's a lot of attention being paid to certain gun laws. Why is there so much attention on California's red flag law after this particular shooting?
So after we learned who the shooter was, we learned that there was a history of domestic violence against his ex-wife, against a former girlfriend, and also, you know, back in 2016, he was on his way back from the Philippines and he was detained by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And he had all of these books on him about terrorism and this black memo book filled with notes about how he hates the VTA. So this seems to be a case where a red flag order could have been in place, but maybe wasn't.
So let's talk a little bit about what a red flag law is. How is it supposed to work?
Basically, the way it works is if you live with someone or you know someone really intimately who has made threats or is being violent and you believe that they're going to hurt themselves or others, you can ask a judge to issue what's called a gun violence restraining order. The judge will ask for evidence that this person is being violent, and in some cases, if it's really dire and the person is, you know, going to be violent or is expected to be violent really soon, they'll have what's called an ex parte hearing where the person in question doesn't have to be present at the hearing, and the order is sort of placed against them, and then guns get taken away. Depending on the situation, a person might go and turn in their gun after receiving one of these orders. Or, more likely, the police will go to the person and seize the guns themselves. Red flag laws are still pretty new. California was actually one of the first states to get a red flag order on its books. California adopted it in 2014 after the Isla Vista shooting near UC Santa Barbara, where the gunman killed six people. But before that, he was sort of broadcasting that he wanted to commit a shooting. Lately, it's actually been expanded. So in 2019, Assemblymember Phil Ting was trying to pass legislation and succeeded. Governor Newsom signed the bill into law, which basically adds employers, coworkers, and educators to the list of people who can ask a judge for a gun violence restraining order.
How often is this law being used, and in which counties?
Last year, about two-thirds of all red flag orders in California came from five counties: San Diego, Santa Cruz, Santa Clara County, Santa Barbara, and Orange County. To get one of these orders approved by a judge, you have to have a lot of interdepartmental coordination, which requires a lot of organization and effort. And if not everybody knows what a red flag order even is, then to get that process through is going to be difficult. In San Diego, in Santa Cruz, in Santa Clara, they have spent a lot of time and resources into getting law enforcement officials educated on what this kind of order is and how to get it through.
The law is only as good as it's known by people in our community.
I was talking to Santa Clara County District Attorney Jeff Rosen, who was saying that in the beginning, when this law was sort of put into effect, officers really weren't using it. It was only until 2019 and 2020, when they really started spending time and money on educating people, that the frequency of these orders being issued actually increased.
We expect to see an increase in the use of these orders in the years going ahead, as we educate more and more individuals and businesses about them.
I know you also spoke to Assemblymember Phil Ting. What does he think about the idea of using this tool more often?
You know, gun violence restraining orders are not a panacea, they're a tool.
He definitely was one of the people pointing to this law as something that could be used, and more awareness needs to be spread around this, but also that there is a little bit of a gap in our understanding of how to use this law.
I don't think we need more amendments. What we need is for more people to understand this tool and for more people to figure out how they can use it.
In 2019, this law got expanded, and then the next year, the pandemic happened. And now we're getting out of the pandemic, and people are getting back to work and getting back into schools. And unfortunately, mass shootings are becoming a thing again. And there is a sort of gap in remembering that these laws exist and spreading awareness that this is something that people can use.
You know, we've made progress in stopping some of these shootings. However, these awful incidents, whenever they happen, whether it's at the VTA or in Parkland, Florida, or at the UPS facility in San Francisco, whenever these incidents happen, we're always left wondering, what if?
Because red flag laws are still pretty new, there's not a lot of information about how effective they are. One study from UC Davis's Violence Prevention Research Program looked at 21 cases over 3 years where California police petitioned to take guns from people who threatened to commit mass shootings. None of those people went on to kill someone else or themselves. So that's one promising sign. But Oddity points out that the red flag law is actually used most often in situations of domestic violence or when someone is at risk of suicide. And it's in those cases when red flag laws have some real limitations.
I talked to someone who is really familiar with how red flag orders work, and her name is Esther Parales-Diekman. She runs Next Door Solutions to Domestic Violence.
There is a lot of research to support that the perpetrators who commit mass shootings usually had earlier incidents of violence or abuse.
The organization supports domestic violence survivors, primarily in the South Bay. They're based in San Jose, and they don't have any relation to the Next Door app.
You know, restraining orders will work if the person observes and will respect that restraining order.
When I talked to her about how this law is really put into effect, she talked about how complicated it actually is.
Very often, we find that people who perpetrate violence are very focused on hurting and abusing the victim, and they're not necessarily concerned about their restraining order.
One issue with these laws is that it requires evidence for a judge to issue this order. And when a person is experiencing abuse, it is a lot to worry about also collecting evidence that this abuse is happening.
Even the person who is the subject of the restraining order has rights. And especially, you know, if that person is in a profession that requires operating a firearm, that definitely is something in the mind of the survivor, because in many cases, the survivor is financially dependent on the person who is inflicting abuse.
Another problem is that, you know, in these situations, it requires a lot of cooperation with law enforcement. And if you're already nervous of how law enforcement is going to, you know, act towards your case, is going to really support you, you're not likely to go to them. If you are undocumented or if you are a person of color, you're not necessarily going to go to the cops immediately for help.
These are all things that we hear from survivors. So there's a lot of deterrence to reporting, to following through with the restraining orders.
It makes these laws really, really tricky, and it's not as simple a solution as maybe we would like to believe.
I think those laws are very important. They're very complicated, and they sort of depend too on the local communities. And so depending on how that interaction is happening among all those system players, that will also determine how effective red flag laws are.
So there's all of these systems in place, and Perales Diekman talked about how this law is there, and maybe this law can be effective. But the problem is it exists within a system that is already sort of stacked against the victim, which makes it hard to be as effective as it maybe could be otherwise.
There are no guarantees. No one can guarantee 100% that a restraining order will prevent violence.
Esther talked about red flag laws as an intervention tool. It's used when violence has already started. And she talked about how violence is almost like a disease. If you get in contact with it, you can spread it.
And so we have to really go further back and to see where can we intervene before violence happens or to prevent the escalation of violence.
She's not really focusing on these orders to protect the people she works with. She wants to prevent violence from happening in the first place. Like, what does a healthy relationship look like? How can she intervene in couples or in families that are already starting to display toxic behavior? And she feels like if she can do this and stop it from beginning, then maybe the work that she does will be more effective.
Prevention is really where we're going to make more difference in terms of, can we lower violence in the community? Can we stop some of these violent acts that are happening across the country? Prevention is key.
A gun violence restraining order is a Band-Aid. It's not a medicine, and it's not going to cure the problem.
Aditi, you actually went to the VTA yard, rail yard, the morning of the shooting, which happened 2 weeks ago, and you've reported on gun violence before. What's the biggest takeaway from this story for you?
Mass shootings bring up these topics, like red flag laws, like background checks, like checking in on people who are dangerous. There are a lot of things that people are talking about, and they always seem to talk about them in the context of mass shootings. But the thing is that suicide is the most common kind of gun violence in America, and domestic violence is also a very common one. They're not as attention-grabbing as a mass shooting is, but they take so many lives. And we need to include those in how we think about laws to prevent gun violence.
Aditi, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
This week, the U.S. Department of Justice drafted so-called model legislation for red flag laws. They're hoping that other states can use it as a framework to come up with their own proposals. Thanks to Aditi Bunlamudi, a Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. Aditi will also be participating in a live KQED special tonight, Wednesday at 6 p.m., where KQED reporters will be talking about the state of gun violence prevention in California. This episode was edited and mixed by Erica Cruz Guevara and Alan Montecilio. Shaylin Martos is our production assistant. Isa Mendoza writes our Friday newsletter. I'm Devin Katayama. That's it from us. To you. Talk to you later.